Welcome to Ujiria, broadcasting live from Business Radio X Studios. Ujiria is a Greek word meaning health of body and mind in aging individuals. Ujiria Radio is a weekly show celebrating the heroes that contribute to the Ujiria of our elderly and disabled population. Now joining us in the studio are your hosts, Sam Grass and Brad Culp.
Good morning. This is Brad. I have Sam in the studio with me, and we have a new producer, and I'm sorry, I've forgotten your name already.
It's Shay.
Shay. I knew it was something not quite common.
I love it. I feel right at home. Thanks, Brad.
Of course you will. So it's November 4th. Today's election day. Did you go vote yet, Sam?
No, I'm going to this afternoon. Yeah. I was in the office at 6:30 and the polls opened at 7, so there was a conflict there.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you got your priorities straight. You know, I ran into Dave Bullard in the gym this morning. You remember Dave from Perimeter School.
Right.
He now works for the Atlanta Public Schools, and he got the whole day off to vote. I'm just wondering why it takes so long for public school teachers to vote.
Yeah, I don't even know what to say to that. I mean, okay, let's move on. Let's move on.
All right. So we've got a great show today. We have two guests with us this morning. We have Terry Bowser from CBC, both from CBC National Bank, and Dan Diadigo. Did I say that right?
You got it.
All right. Gentlemen, thanks for joining us this morning, taking time out of your schedule. We're glad to have you. Let's start with Terry. Terry, if you could just give us a little bit of background on who you are, where you grew up and went to school, and how you got to be doing what you're doing today.
Thanks, Brad. Delighted to be here. Grew up in southwestern Pennsylvania, small town about 70 miles from Gettysburg. Visited Myrtle Beach, I think, in 1975, and saw my first Southern Belle, and I never went back north after that. So I've loved being in Georgia for about 30 years now.
So you're not a native, but you got here as soon as you could.
Absolutely. You betcha.
Give us a little bit of background on education and how you got to be doing what you're doing today.
Okay. Went to school in Indiana University of Pennsylvania, the school that most of you have never heard of, but the claim to fame now is the co-founder of YouTube was a graduate of IUP. So he became a half billionaire when he sold his share to Google. But great little school in the shadow of Pittsburgh Steeler country.
Excellent. Okay. Dan, same question.
Almost a native, okay? Came down here when I was 10. Brought my parents with me from New York. So I've been down here for several decades at this point. I guess I've got enough Yankee in me to tell the truth and enough Southern in me to be polite about it. So been here for a while, been in mortgage banking for 25 years, married, have four wonderful kids. Probably the most interesting thing about me, got into mortgage banking as I was passing through. I was actually a broadcast news major and business minor at UGA. Don't hold that against me, West Virginia.
I'm all for UGA, believe me.
But, you know, been in the business for, 2.5 decades, the last 10 years of which I've either had a division within a company that I was running or within a bank platform that I was running that specialized in reverse mortgage lending. And over the past several years, I've more than become a fan of it. It's become a bit of a passion.
That's interesting because I think at least early on and maybe still today, there are a lot of people that are kind of skeptical of that particular product. And so let me just springboard off of your comment and ask you to respond to that.
Absolutely. The product itself, when I say the word reverse mortgage, is more of a generic term that can spread across a bunch of different ideas. What we offer at CBC National Bank is a home equity conversion mortgage. This is the HUD-insured version of the reverse mortgage. About a year ago, about this time or so, about a year ago, right, Terry? The product itself underwent a revamp to institute some more consumer safeguards. And as an evolving product, it's taken a little time to reach a place where it's reached a level of what I would call efficiency. That really and truly, I think as lenders, we've found a way to balance the interests of consumers, you know, with the profit motive that's inherent to banks.
So let's take a step back then and tell me a little bit, or tell our listeners a little bit about what exactly you mean by a home equity conversion mortgage.
Sure. You're probably familiar with a home equity line of credit. Most people are. With a home equity line of credit, you make payments to equity every month. You write a check. The bank applies a portion of that payment to your equity. With a reverse mortgage, and this is where the term reverse came from, it's the opposite of that. Your bank, your loan, your house pays you money from the equity that's already in the house. It's your money coming back to you.
So how does that differ than someone going out and getting a refinancing their home or a second mortgage or whatever it may be?
Well, Sam, the biggest difference is that as long as the borrower or both borrowers, if it's a husband and wife or two sisters or two friends, as long as one of the borrowers continues living in the home, there are no repayments due. The borrowers have to be 62 years old. They can take a loan out. They can pull part of the equity out. They can receive that in a single lump sum. They can receive monthly payments. They can receive a partial lump sum and leave the rest of it in a line of credit and draw from over a period of time. But the biggest difference between that and the typical home equity loan is they don't have to repay that loan as long as one of them continues living in the home. They can live there till they're 120 years old and there are no payments due.
That might be, from what I understand about reverse mortgage, that might be the issue that most people stumble on. I don't make payments. How does that work? How does it get paid back?
That's a great question. The reality of the fact is that payments are being made, but they're being accrued back to the balance of the loan. A home equity conversion mortgage, again, it relies on the equity in your house to make payments to you or to alleviate the burden of a monthly payment. But every month that you don't make a payment, that payment that would have been made under, say, what we call a forward mortgage, will go back to the balance that is due on the loan that you took. Now, the offset to that is the presumption of some kind of a growth rate to the value of your home. So what we try to focus on is what is the net equity as you accumulate debt onto your home equity conversion mortgage, what is the value of your house doing? And again, these are regulated tables that we work under. And these tables are developed for the benefit of the senior so that this doesn't become a lopsided equation.
So those tables are they created on a geographical basis then? So I mean, here's where I'm going with this. As I'm listening to you talk about this, I'm wondering if you're going to offer different terms to someone who has a home, let's say in a small town in southwestern Pennsylvania or southeastern Pennsylvania, or can't remember wherever. Which it was, but, you know, are you going to offer the same terms to that person as to someone who owns a beachfront property in Southern California?
Yeah, Brad, that's a good question. There's no difference based on geography. The FHA lending limit is $625,000, and what that means is that's the maximum value they can recognize in a home. If a borrower came to us and they owned a $1 million home, because of the FHA lending limit, we can only recognize the value as being $625,000. But it doesn't matter if they live in Boston or they live in Florida or West Virginia or Montana. Geography has no role in that whatsoever.
So what I thought I heard you saying, though, was that you know, one of the factors was how fast is your home appreciating? And so that's why I drew that comparison, because, you know, you're not going to see a lot of appreciation in a small town in the heartland compared to, you know, maybe a hot area, pick one, So that was the reason for the
HUD,
question.
HUD makes the presumption today that there is a 4% appreciation rate annually in the property, okay. And that's across the board. Now, what you hit on, though, there are variations in what you're eligible to receive, and that's tied to your age, and that's tied to the amount of equity in your home, and also what sorts of liens need to be paid off. So there is a formula that we rely on that's put forward by the Department of Housing and Urban Development that we apply to each individual case as per the formula, which the numbers can be different. If you're older, you're going to be eligible for more, for example.
They don't look at things like health or other factors.
Correct. The an individual's health does not matter. Just to give you an example, the loan eventually does have to be paid back. In most cases, the loan is going to be paid back after the borrower dies. But the loan is due under several circumstances. It's basically when the homeowner no longer occupies the home as their primary residence. So if they sell the home, then the loan must be repaid. If they move out of the home, if they move in to, with relatives, if they have a second home that they move into, or after they die, at that point the loan is due.
And if they're upside down at that point?
If they're upside down at that point, if the borrower is still living and sells the home and they're upside down, they're responsible only for paying the amount of the loan or 95% of the appraised value of the home. If they're upside down, FHA mortgage insurance pays that deficit. That protects the borrower, protects the borrower's heirs, and it protects the lender too. It makes sure that the heirs or the borrower never have to pay anything more than
the value of the house.
Correct. How often does that happen?
In most cases, based on my experience, and I've helped probably 200 borrowers, homeowners, senior homeowners with a reverse mortgage. Most of them intend to live in the home for the rest of their lives. The program has been around since 1989. I don't have any experience at this point with homeowners living long enough that they will be upside down.
Well, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Dan, do you have a can you expound on that?
Yeah, I would say like the rest of the real estate market in the 2008-2009 period when property values plummeted, that threw everybody out of kilter, including the assumptions made for the home equity conversion mortgages. Mm-hmm. Now, the good news is this, is that – and we have clients that actually have done this. They would have taken out a home equity conversion mortgage before the crash. And now their heirs are only responsible for 95% of the appraised value to recapture that property upon their death. I mean, it worked out well for the heirs in that case. Kind of reversed that equation a little bit. We've as the crash was starting to unfold, we had one very astute borrower contact us, and he wanted to take out a home equity conversion mortgage, but only the line of credit. In other words, he wanted to be able to tap the equity in his home at when he wanted to, but he wanted it based on the value of his property at that time.
At the top of the market.
At the top of the market, which was brilliant, right. Really. And he's sitting on that line of credit today.
Interesting.
I mean, and Brad and I, we've had obviously several conversations in regards to reverse mortgage. And every time we get into it, he and I try to shoot holes in it, and honestly, there's not many. I mean, we have not really come up with reasons for individuals not to consider this.
Well, I think it's an emotion. It can be an emotionally charged conversation when you're dealing with aging in place. You're dealing with heirs and estate planning. Sometimes it's not as clinical as, you know, when you're buying your first home or you're in your 30s. I mean, this is a big deal, and I think there's a lot of misinformation that floats around, most of which can be addressed very rationally with explaining the product.
So that's actually a good lead-in to that conversation, because I think there probably are quite a few objections that you might get when you're trying to sell this product. What are some of the misunderstandings around this product, and how do you respond to them?
One of the objections, Brad, that I hear sometimes is from adult children, most of whom want the very best for their parents. But they're based on tradition. There are sometimes adult children who feel like it's their right to inherit the home or the value of the home. So that is sometimes an area of pushback. I think it bears worth repeating that most adult children want the best for their parents. So if their parents need the equity in their home for home improvements, for medical care, just to make ends meet, the majority of the time, the adult children support the reverse mortgage. But there are cases when either the adult children want the equity, they don't want the parents to do the reverse mortgage, or there are times when the client themselves, the senior homeowner, they have lived in an environment where they inherited something from their parents, so they feel like, I really want to leave something to my children as well.
To their own detriment.
Correct.
Could be. You know, yeah.
In some cases.
And we've had a significant demographic shift over the last 10, 15 years. The boomers are now tripping the 62 and 65 wire. They're aging. People are living longer. The investments that were relied upon in the 80s and the 90s aren't proving to meet expectations. So we're seeing this formula where you've got the next generation, getting caught in a bit of a vice, having to help make decisions. I'd echo what Terry has to say is, you know, I think most people want their parents to be comfortable to age in place if that's what they desire to do. But the choice they run into is, how do we do that? I mean, are we going to pay for the medical costs ourselves today out of pocket to help our parents? Or are we going to forfeit some equity, maybe an inheritance tomorrow? You know, which benefits our parents the most? And we see that decision intersecting more often than not.
What about one of the objections I've heard is that it's expensive. You know, what about the option of saying, all right, I've got $400,000 of equity in my home, and I can go get a HELOC for prime plus a half, and, you know, I can exercise that and just pay back the interest, you know, so I pull out enough so that I can pay back the interest, and I don't have any closing costs, how do you respond to that?
Sure, I would say every loan is expensive. You know, it has interest to it. You know, there are costs that go with loans. What makes the home equity conversion mortgage unique is probably the mortgage insurance premium. That's like on any FHA loan, there is a mortgage insurance premium that's paid. That's what creates the fund that protects with the exit strategy that Terry was talking about earlier. When you compare it to a home equity line of credit, the significant difference is this. It's in the it's in the monthly cash flow. It's in the ability to not have a monthly mortgage payment to make. And also, back to the crunch in 2008, 2009, I think it was not a unique experience where a lot of folks thought they had a home equity line of credit available to them. The banks came back and froze their lines, and suddenly they didn't have the access that they thought they had at the time that they actually needed it. So that doesn't happen with a home equity line of credit. I mean, with a home equity conversion mortgage.
I think to expand on that, I would say half of the borrowers that come to me already have taken out a typical standard home equity loan, and they're struggling to make those payments. So the fact that that we can rescue them, we can wipe out that home equity loan. In fact, in some cases, the borrower doesn't even walk away from the reverse mortgage with any cash, but they wipe out a significant mortgage that already exists. Yeah. A couple stories or a success story. A common client is one who was married and had two Social Security checks coming in, and one of the spouses dies, so they have one Social Security check left, and they have difficulty making ends meet. I had a client in Big Canoe, beautiful $300,000 house. The wife died. The husband was struggling to make an $1,100 house payment on this $300,000 home, and we were able to do a reverse mortgage, wipe out the existing mortgage and provide him some monthly payments as well. That's a very common client who has lost a Social Security check.
You know, we've been spending a lot of time talking about what we would refer to as needs-based clients, and their need is obvious, and the product meets their need. But more and more we're seeing a shift towards a different type of profile, basically an asset preservation strategy that financial advisors are utilizing to, you know, help their clients plan for the future. So they don't have to get stuck trying to time the market with a sale or an exit. So they can keep cash available for their heirs and their estate, knowing that if they're tapping the equity in their home for this, then, you know, that's an exculpatory loan that's being made. It's not hitting their heirs while right. they're still earning on their assets.
So it's interesting you bring that up because my parents did that a number of years ago and didn't bother to tell me about it until, I don't know, maybe a year ago that they finally opened the kimono and said, you know, somebody else needs to know about this. But, you know, essentially that was the plan. They took a lump sum reverse mortgage against the house. They put it into an annuity that was performing better than the real estate appreciation. And, you know, I haven't looked at all the details, but it looks like it was a reasonable move for them, and it secured their future for 30 years in their 70s. So, you know, at least, and I think their approach was, we don't want our kids to ever have to take care of us. We want to be able to take what we have and ensure that we can take care of ourselves. And, you know, it looks like they've done that. So, interesting right. approach.
You know, as you were talking, and Brad knows my story, I was thinking about my parents and when we had to start liquidating and dividing up the estate. And as I think about that, we would have been better off in hindsight to have this cash, as you just described, Dan, rather than take securities and now have to be faced with capital gains, or do we sell based upon and wherever the market might be, up or down. In that case, it was down. And so we struggled with that issue, and we would have been better off, I think, as what you're saying, if we'd had the cash. So then had the luxury to determine what we wanted to do with the securities and when we wanted to do it. Yeah, interesting.
So this is, you know, an interesting aspect of reverse mortgages that we really haven't hit before. We've had a lot of conversations with reverse mortgage specialists in the past, but the notion of using a reverse mortgage for asset preservation is an interesting topic. When's the right time for somebody to exercise that option?
I can give you an example of a client who came to me. She was 75 years old, a former professor from Agnes Scott College. She had pension and Social Security. She had some funds in investment securities, probably over $100,000. But she lived in a 100-year-old house. She needed a new roof. She needed a bunch of new windows. She needed new carpeting. It was going to cost her almost $50,000. She didn't want to pull $50,000 out of investment securities, so she tapped a reverse mortgage, although she had access to probably well over $100,000. All she needed was $50,000. So she pulled $50,000 out from a reverse mortgage, made all the repairs, new roof, new windows, new carpet, and allowing her investment portfolio to continue to grow for her. She never has to pay back that $50,000 that she pulled out of a reverse mortgage.
And if there were heirs, then once she dies and they sell the property, then anything that they've sold the property for above the $50,000 becomes
plus interest.
Plus interest, right? Becomes inheritance, correct?
Absolutely.
So, correct.
Right. I mean, and that's the key that right. people have got to understand. So, I mean, even if it's bigger numbers, it's still the same. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't matter if you pulled out a $500,000, but the property's worth $600,000, you still have a net $100,000. Yeah.
So would there be a time that would be too early? I mean, can you think of a scenario where, you know, somebody turns 62, they're eligible, and maybe they want to pursue some kind of asset preservation strategy, or there's a reason to pull a lump sum out and do something different with it?
I think you need to look at the whole picture. Everybody's situation is a little bit different. The longer you wait, the more cash you're eligible for. So that's just per HUD's table. So that's something to keep in mind. But every situation is unique. Every situation is different. You got to look at the whole picture.
What are the interest rates typically when you compare them to a standard 30-year fixed mortgage? What kind of premium do you pay for that?
The HECMs run off what we call an expected rate. Again, it's formula-driven. It's a number that HUD tabulates for us where we predict what that rate's going to be over the life of the loan. And right now, the expected rates are sitting in the high fours, possibly the low fives. So to compare that to, say, a conventional 30-year fix today is in the low to mid fours, it's about a half a percent higher.
Anything else that you can think of that we haven't touched? Is there an event that you are associated with or anything that you'd like to bring to light, Terry?
If I had more time, I could tell you one of 100 different feel-good stories.
Bring up one. How's that sound?
One of them that I really like was an individual who came to me who was 61 years old. He wasn't old enough to do the reverse mortgage yet, but he was close to his 62nd birthday. He was actually in foreclosure. He had been unemployed for 9 months. He had a first mortgage and a second mortgage, and his son was supplementing his income every month. And his son finally said, "Dad, I can't help you anymore. You can come live in my basement, but I can't help you on a monthly basis." His home was scheduled for foreclosure sale. We were able to postpone the foreclosure. We instituted the application. We closed the loan on his 62nd birthday. It paid off the first mortgage, paid off the second mortgage, and gave him about $15,000 or $20,000 on top of that. So it mm-hmm. saved his home. He was days away from losing his home. And then a follow-up good news was about 5 months later, he got a job. So that's an example of we can save people when they're backed into the corner to the extent they're even looking at foreclosure.
Yeah, that's great.
And the fact that he went and got a job is, it shows that this is not just for the 85-year-old that's housebound that, wants to just stay there for a few more years. This can be a valuable tool for somebody that's still of working age.
That's a good point.
Wells Fargo did a extensive survey several years ago, and the number one reason people obtain a reverse mortgage is because they want to stay in their homes. They want to age in place. We help that happen.
Sounds familiar, doesn't it, Brad?
Indeed.
Yeah. Time has almost expired. First of all, thank you. But before that, I'm going to look to Terry. If you could give the listening audience one piece of advice when it comes to reverse mortgages, what a high-level piece of advice might you give them?
I would say do some research now. It may not be necessary now. It might not be a perfect fit now, but it's good to do some research, especially since some of the publicity in the media hasn't been real positive. The rest of the story, the other side of the story, is it's a really good fit for a number of different homeowners. So get some education now and determine if it's a good fit now or a good fit down the road.
And obviously, age is not, obviously 62 is a limit, but it's for a 62-year-old as well as an 82-year-old.
Absolutely. I've completed a reverse mortgage for a 99-year-old who wanted to spend the rest of her life in her home, and she did. She lived for another 3 years after that.
That's great. Wow. That's great. How could our listening audience contact you or CBC Bank? How would you like for them to reach out to you?
My email address is one way. That's terry.bowser@cbcnationalbank, terry.bowser@cbcnationalbank.com. Telephone 404-642-6021.
We once again thank you. We want to invite you back. We've certainly been kind and gracious hosts. We'd like to invite you back on a special occasion.
Thank you for the invitation. It's been great to be here.
And If there happens to be something in the future that is relevant to the to your industry or something that you are sponsoring, please let us know.
Thank you both, Sam and Brad. Sure appreciate it.
Thank you. That's it for today. We want to remind our listening audience that they can always go to our website, ujiriaradio.com, and pull down and listen to any broadcast that we have. And as we always do, we want to close and say that if the youth of this nation is its greatest natural resource, it goes without saying that the seniors of this nation is its greatest national treasure. Thank you, and God bless.
Ujiria Radio is sponsored by Griswold Special Care and broadcast live from the Business Radio X studios.